A very good afternoon to you. Welcome in. Spotlight interview on a Saturday afternoon. I don't think sport has ever been through a period of change like we are experiencing right now. Yes, there is the debate around crowds. And you look, for example, Cronulla versus the North Queensland Cowboys tonight in the NRL. There is 4,000, as of yesterday afternoon, 4,000 tickets sold. You look at what's happening with the All Blacks. Forsyth Bar in Dunedin for Australia v New Zealand didn't sell out, as far as I know, until game day. There has been sluggish sales ahead of New Plymouth tonight. Also, as far as Albany is concerned, South Africa versus the All Blacks next weekend. But it's much more than that. It is the traditional sports that are having to hold on as kids start to embrace, or as we like to now call them, the new millennials, new sports. Look at the Olympic Committee, the IOC. They brought out their report, the 2020 report, how the Olympic Games should look to appeal to younger viewers, younger people. What are they into as far as sports are concerned? So that's the reason why we've seen skateboarding, speed climbing, surfing brought into the Olympic Games as well. Now there is massive chatter, and we'll look at this weekend, that esports, this gaming sort of phenomenon, is going to be included either Paris 2024 or LA 2028. Quite simply, the IOC cannot ignore that. Then you've got all these issues around respect and responsibility, which is massive in sport at the moment. How do we keep young women in sport beyond high school? How do we keep women's sport relevant? How do we make them commercially viable? That's another issue on the back of what happened with the Black Ferns. Then you add in elements like virtual reality in sport. Now, this is going to be monumental. So this would basically, if I try and put this into words for you, this would allow you to go to sports events and watch it through those little special goggles or glasses you wear and experience exactly what you do get from a live sporting event from the couch and the comfort of your own home. Now, that is going to be another massive challenge for sport in this country as well. So there is so much happening at the moment, and we're just not sure how the landscape will look. For example, with Sky Television, with Amazon coming into the market, will we be streaming the All Blacks, for example, inside 2 or 3 years' time? So this afternoon, we thought we'd bring in Pete Miskimming, who is the CEO of Sport NZ. We do this on a regular basis to get a, I guess, state of the game, a state of the landscape from where they're at the moment. A year on from the Olympic Games, where do they see the trends in sport? There is a fact to be looked at here that the mainstream sports, the crickets, the rugbies, the rugby leagues, participation numbers amongst our youth are dropping. There is no doubt about that. Our youth are embracing new types of sports. Peter joins us on the Spotlight interview. Peter, a very good afternoon to you. Let's start with the reaction to the Respect and Responsibility Report out of the NZRU. So 1,700 pages, a summary review, and I think most sporting organisations would have read this. How much do you think this could be and does have the potential to be a sea change, not just for rugby union, not just for the male codes, but for sport in this country?
Well, I think this has been building for a while. I think there are many sports that are very conscious of the need for you know, gender diversity, for inclusion, for more social behaviours that pervade sport to be addressed. So, I do commend New Zealand Rugby. I think maybe through necessity they had to come and do a review of their sport. But when you read the review, it's pretty comprehensive. They are talking now about a massive cultural change across rugby. And I'm sure there's a few other NSOs, national sporting bodies out there that are taking real notice of this and some of the recommendations in it, because I think it just reinforces at the moment there is a real appetite to want to make sure that we see sport as inclusive for everyone, that everyone can play fairly and they can play with low risk and opportunity. So, I think it is a good call to sport to consider how we're managing things.
But Peter, there is so much to take in for the public. I mean, it's a 1,700-page document. Yes, there is an executive summary. Yes, we've heard from the main protagonists involved in this particular Respect and Responsibility report. What are the main things? When you read through that, what did you see as the main issues of rugby? And I guess this could broaden out, as I say, to other sports, other male-dominated domains as well, which needed to change.
I mean, if you think about rugby, it has been the bastion of our sport throughout our history, and it's been pretty male dominated. You know, someone said to me the other day, it's male, stale and pale, and it has been for a long time. And because of that, there are issues that probably have not been addressed over a period of time. And I think this all culminated to this review. And again, you know, courageous in terms of leadership, the board, Steve Chu, actually saying, yes, we have to culturally change our sport. We have to consider who we are, what we are, and what we contribute to society. And society is expecting far more from sport than what it's had previously. So I think when you look at all that, what I see in it, I see the issue of inclusion. I see the issues of diversity and gender equity. I see issues of making sure that young talent coming into a professional pathway in secondary school, expectations are set appropriately at that stage so they get the behaviours right. So I see addressing social behaviour, be that around alcohol, be that around women, respect for women. Those things, I think, are going to be addressed not only at the New Zealand rugby level, but all the way right through provincial rugby, all the way right down to clubs. Now, that's a really big ask, and it's going to take some time, but it's courageous, and I think it's the right thing to do.
Peter, is this a team thing here? What I mean by that, I go back to my days at university. I went to Bathurst, Chelsea University in Australia, and we had a first 15 side, and, you know, if you made that team, Pete, doors opened, and you know what I'm talking about here in terms of, you know, we had an 8-1 ratio of women to males at my university here. So all of a sudden, if you made the first 15, things came to you, you were popular, all of it. And I see that, and I remember, you know, I've seen some bars, for example, in Auckland, which would be the host bar of the Blues team, and you know, they kind of felt like they were walking on water here. So is it the team environment when you get a bunch of guys together that they believe anything can go, if that makes sense, Pete?
No, I'm not sure. I think you know, team sport is brings a lot of value, you know, understanding how to play in a team, how to be a good team player. I think any sport that has the public, adoration for it, even a young level, if you make the first 15, you were somebody. And I think that again may not have been helpful for a lot of people. It made them feel a little bit more of a superstar than what they were. And then all of a sudden we expected, with all this weight of expectation, we expected 19, 20-year-olds to act like they are 40 and 50-year-olds. And so you've got to disconnect with that. And I think what rugby's saying is that they need to train and teach their younger players what is socially acceptable today. And what happened in the past, in your day and my day, and what happens now, you wouldn't get away with it. And so I think though those sort of behaviours have been called, and rightly so. And I think rugby's created an environment where they can make those calls. They've got a mandate to do that now.
Yeah, look, I was driving around Friday afternoon. I heard Mark Watson, who was on for Daniel McCarty, talking about this would never happen with, you know, elite sport, our Olympic sports. And then I was starting to think, okay, well, we had issues with the Australian swimmers. You might remember going back to London. I think there were some incidents in Rio as well, sexual harassment of other athletes in their team. That was a major issue. We know about the sleeping pill issues around that, excessive drinking and that. Have we ever had issues that you're aware of around our Olympians, our elite sports people, and those sort of, you know, the rowing, the kayaking, these sort of sports? I mean, the argument of Watto is this, that you never see them doing it because you have to train too hard to be able to go and have these blowouts and therefore disrespect people and get yourselves in these situations, Pete.
I think for me is these things probably have happened and have happened in the past, and probably still are. They've probably not been exposed as much as what rugby has done. I mean, one of the things that we're really conscious of at the moment is a duty of care of our athletes. And there's a worldwide sense around making sure that athletes aren't treated as commodities. They're actually people. And we're asking them to do extraordinary things. And because of that, they can be quite vulnerable. And so making sure that we create the right daily training environment with the right support around that. And that's why you're seeing now a lot more conversation with athletes around their careers, their long-term career and what they happen, their mental well-being. Because a lot of these athletes are very obsessed, you know, they are very single-minded about what they do. And that can go well when it's all, you know, heading in the right direction. But when things go against them, the resilience to be able to manage that. So, yeah, look, I'm sure there are many of those sorts of issues that do occur. They may not be public, but as administrators and sport leaders, we are concerned to make sure that we are looking at these people, in a holistic way and looking at both, you know, their world on the park and their world off the park, and we need to do it better to make that balance.
Pete, then where are we at as far as the women's side of sport is concerned? And this is something I'm really interested to chat with you about. So we saw the success of the Black Ferns and the debate that followed around how do we turn that into a truly professional game? Is that possible? Is it commercially possible as well? We see in Australia, for example, they've got the Big Bash Females League. They've got the AFL Female League now as well. Are we doing enough then to keep young women in sport in this country? And if not, how do we improve that?
Well, the answer is, well, I don't think we are, but I think we're consciously aware now that we need to do more. You know, isn't it interesting, in Rio, we run more medals with females than we did males. So we have got really good role models, but I'm not sure that we represent those role models in the right way and they get enough exposure in the media. So, you know, I think we need to look at our young children, certainly our teenage girls, where there's a lot of drop-off in sport, and make sure we are creating the right heroes to keep them inspired, to keep them in for sport longer. I think there are many sports now, we certainly at Sport New Zealand, are actively thinking about how we address that community that of young teenage girls and what we need to do to keep them in sport. And equally, you know, how do we, you know, the Black Ferns, how fantastic a result was that? And netball girls against Australia and then last night against England. You know, our girls do exceptionally well, and we need to celebrate them and recognise their abilities more than we do. And that's us at sport, it's you and the media. And I think we've got a collective responsibility to ensure that there is equity, gender balance of what happens in media, to ensure that we're getting the right messages to the right people.
The thing is, though, with everything I do on this show, Peter, here's my rule, right? And this is for Sam, my producer. We talk about this. So he mentioned the Chatham Cup to me this weekend, and he said, are we covering that? And I said, well, give me an angle. And that's what I always have, a rule of thumb. What is my number one question? What is my opening question? If I'm getting Pete Miskimmin on the program, what are we going to talk about? So with everything, Pete, when it comes to me with my show, there's got to be a reason. Now, the Black Ferns were simple, because even on that first day when they won, I was having people on and asking Salika Winiata about, okay, how do we grow this? How do we not let it go into that sort of four-year Olympic cycle that we see where it becomes a black hole and we don't cover it, Pete? So there's got to be a reason for us in the media and a reason for you guys, the fans, to care.
Yep, agreed. I mean, look at Big Bash then, your example. Interestingly, how much that has grown, and two things have come from that. One, the amount of female fans that are turning up and watching it. Now we've got a Big Bash Women's League, and now we've got a real growth in women's cricket in Australia. And so, you know, media and exposure of those things done in the right way can actually create the market and create the attention and create the awareness that we need. I think what we've done is we've had the diet, the sort of traditional diet for a long time. What we've got now is a lot of our women who are doing incredibly well, and we need to celebrate that more, I think, and recognise what they do. But more to that, we need to leverage that back into creating the right role models for our young teenage girls, because that's where we're seeing a lot of drop-off in sport. And we want to make sure that those girls who really have been only given a traditional diet of you know, netball and football, etc., and hockey, and a lot of that is in a highly competitive competition environment, that's not what they're looking for. Girls are looking for more of a social outlet. They're looking for less competition and more playing with mates. So again, I'm not sure we're representing the opportunities in the right way. And there's a lot of thinking going on around that now, with ourselves and with sports, to see if we can make sure that girls stay in sport longer.
I know we're focusing a lot on rugby, but it just happens to be that as the issues that have come up of late. I mean, are you going to work with New Zealand Rugby? We know the numbers playing, females playing rugby are going up. In fact, they're the reason why the growth numbers in rugby are that at all. So do you work with NZRU? Do you see there is a possibility? I mean, how do we get games for the Black Ferns on a regular basis? Because therefore, then you probably build the provincial competition as a result, and you give young women a chance to sit back and say, maybe 5 years down the track, there is a professional career for me.
Yeah, I think it's up to every individual sport to look at what their showcase is and what they do to leverage that showcase. You know, what we are seeing now is a real shift in participation. You only got to go back and see what's happening in secondary school now. You know, rugby overall is down. You know, things like futsal and basketball is up. So we're really interested to know where are those sports that are becoming more attractive to young people, and how we might help stimulate that further. So I think it's a horses for courses. Are we talking to rugby? Well, yes. Are we talking to those other sports? We are. But we're interested in what is attracting people to their sport, young boys and girls, and how might we stimulate that and change that? Because overall, our participation rates are falling. And we've got to make sure that we are working where kids are interested in playing and being involved.
Right, I will continue this conversation. Need to get to a break. Pete Miskimming with us out of Sport NZ. I want to look at this about, the trends now of what young people are into. For example, there's all this talk at the moment about esports and, young kids loving this. Does that become an Olympic sport? There'll be those that argue, how can you call playing a console a sport? Well, those numbers, they're getting along to that. So what are kids into as well? The centralisation of the women's or the men's sevens team, but no centralisation of the women's sevens team. So where are we at with that? New man in charge of High Performance Sport New Zealand as well. We do this on a regular basis. We get Peter in to look at where our sport is at the moment. More from Peter next.